He's Mr. Wrestling number one. I'm Mr. Wrestling number two. If you remember wrestling back in the days, yeah, you know, you go. It's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be tag teaming, going from one side to the other, sharing some different things. I could tell from the looks in your eyes, you had no idea who Mr. Wrestling number one and Mr. Wrestling number two are. That is so sad that you guys don't watch. Well, guys, let me just say from the outset, we are not presenting ourselves as experts on church security. Guys, I want to be real clear on that because we're not. We just want to help you think about some issues today that will hopefully give you a balanced approach to how you handle security at your church. Here's our goal. Every Sunday morning, I want our people to walk in and feel safe. But at the same time, I don't want them to walk into church thinking they've just gone through the TSA line at the airport or that they're walking into the White House. We want to be very clear. We want to be security conscious, but we try to do it in a very casual, comfortable way that, to be honest with you, we hope that people don't even notice. This afternoon, we're going to give you some practical ideas about how to think about church security. And also, we want to help you evaluate maybe what you're already doing. And some of you may be way ahead of where we are. Some of you probably hadn't even thought about it. So we're just going to kind of give you an overview. This is Chris Martin. He's my partner today. Chris is one of our ushers. He's also on our security team. Just to give you a little bio on Chris, he's a seven-year firearm instructor. He's certified NRA instructor on pistol and range safety officer. He's a student of situational awareness and the criminal mind. And he does some training through a company that he has called Advocate Defense. And Chris has actually done a training session for us here at the church that we really, really enjoyed. And that's what gave us the idea to maybe share some things with you. We've got a lot to cover. We're going to do it in a short time. So, Chris, take over.
Thank you, James. I appreciate that. That's a great bio that I wrote myself. So here's our agenda. We're going to talk about data. Data is important. Numbers always tell the truth, right? Unless they're coming from the government. No, that's that. All right, we're not going to get political. Insurance and liability, which is super important. Developing a security team, which is very important. The commitment to training, which you have to have. And a plan of action, right? So if we look at the data, what does it say? Since Columbine shooting in April of 1999, there have been 23 fatal church shootings in the U.S. One church, it has happened twice. These are a list, okay? World Changers in College Park, Georgia. And just so you know, in Georgia, College Park rated the number one dangerous city in the state. All right, happened in 2005 and 2012 there. And then we'll talk a little bit about 2017, which is Sutherland Springs, which is the most deadly shooting in American history inside of our church. And then, of course, 2019 West Freeway Church, which is the one all of us pretty much know about because it was on video, if you've seen that video. And in my class, I go into that. There's a lot to learn from that video. It's hard to watch, but there is a lot to learn from that, okay? So of the data, the offender was affiliated with the church that he was at 39% of the time. 35, he was not. If you look at Sutherland Springs, Texas, the guy, the shooter in that instance, actually spent time and ate with the people that he later shot and killed, okay? Now, there's a joke in here on this slide. I told James I wasn't going to tell it, but you fill it in as you need to. Denomination attack, 31% of the time Baptist, basically because there's more Baptists, right? 22%. Or Catholic, 11% non-denominational, and 11% Methodist. Reason attacked, intimate partner, 16.5%. And when I go through my class, what I tell security team people and the leaders and even leadership of the church is you need to understand what's going on inside your church, right? If you look back again at Sutherland Springs, Texas, that was a domestic issue. The shooter showed up to kill his ex-wife and her family. Because the thing is that in your church on Sunday, the shooter knows his family's going to be there, and the shooter also knows his kids are going to be there, okay? The location of the attack, which is also important. Inside the church, 47% of the time. Outside, 38% of the time. And both, 14% of the time. And James is in agreement with this because we talked before I did the training here. The way I look at church security is you have to catch them in the parking lot. If you allow them to get in, you've already lost, right? So that means your security team has to be trained on what to look for, what to notice, what isn't right, okay? I remember during the youth conference not too long ago here, I was on duty right out here outside this door. A dump truck and a guy pulling a tractor pulled in, and we were on him faster than you could shake an eye, right? Yeah, like white on rice. I hear you, brother. I'm with you. I'm trying to be right, okay? So I don't know which one of you it was, but I heard it, right? So it's important that you know when things don't belong, what's different, right? Weapons used, 49% of the time inside the church, it was a handgun. 32% of the time, it was a rifle. 16% was a shotgun. And 3, they set the place on fire, okay? Now, if you compare inside the church with outside the church, most of the time in common areas or public places is what the FBI calls it, you'll see that rifles are more prevalent, okay? The handgun, easier to conceal coming inside a building, right? This is a slide off the FBI website that compares 2021 to 2022. 61 incidents in 2021, 50 in 2022, and I'm not gonna read all this, you can go down through there, right? Down here, about 7 down, shooter wore body armor. 2 in 2021 and 4. So it doubled in 2022. And, you know, when I give my talks, I talk a lot about how it's different now. Shooters now want to live. And the reason they want to live is because every time they come up for parole, they get that glory again because it's in every newspaper. The victims' families have to show up, right? So, you know, if you remember just the other day, what was it, last week, the Jacksonville shooter that went into the Family Dollar, right? That's the way it used to happen. Usually the shooter would commit suicide the minute that they had any kind of resistance against them, right? But we're seeing that trend change.
Well, when you look at the numbers, you get focused on shootings, and that's what everybody over the last several years has been focused on, is a live shooter. But your security team is going to deal with far, far more than live shootings. Matter of fact, we hope and pray we'll never deal with a live shooting. And that's one of the things that I remind our guys every week about, is that possibility. But most of the time what we're dealing with in church is usually somebody who's angry at the pastor. That happened in your church. And this is probably the most often, a domestic dispute. You've got a couple in the middle of a divorce arguing over children. Or you encounter someone who is suffering some sort of mental illness, and I'll talk a minute about a recent experience we had with that. Or someone that just hates what we stand for. And I think in the next few years, that is going to become much more prevalent for us as we think about church security. So when you think about security today, I want you guys to think beyond a guy in camouflage driving up into your parking lot and walking across with a rifle in his hand. You hope, again, that would never happen, but there's a lot of things that you're going to face that you need a security team for beyond that. A few weeks ago, we had a mentally ill gentleman walk into our church on a Sunday morning. Now, we had a little bit of warning because earlier that morning, Pastor Sandy got an email from him. And when I got here, Sandy called me in his office and said, you need to read this. And it was a bizarre email, really weird. But Sandy knew the guy. He was a part of our church for a very brief period of time, about 30 years ago. I didn't remember the guy at the time. But he sent this weird email basically saying that he was going to show up because he wanted to tell Pastor Sandy thank you. And that set off all kind of alarms. But the problem we had that day was this was 30 years ago when we knew the guy. Nobody knew what he looked like except Pastor Sandy. So I immediately went to our usher team and our security guys. I meet with them every Sunday morning. And I said, hey, I want us to be on high alert this morning. Here's the situation. We got an email from a person. Here's what we're looking for. And, you know, we talked about, you know, basically what we were looking for. Well, the guy didn't show up until right at the last minute. He came in with a crowd of people. We didn't catch him. But I'm standing in the back of the sanctuary where I always do on Sunday, and I immediately picked him out. And that's because he was sitting right down there on the third row, and he's looking around with this kind of bizarre, looking at people behind him like he's scoping out the place. And it was eerie. And I'm thinking, how did he get to the third row? For some reason, they always get to the third row. Well, I immediately got our security guy, Mark, that was on that morning, and I said, Mark, come here. He's right down there. Go sit right behind him. And so Mark went and sat right behind him, and as trained, Mark tapped him on the shoulder and said hi to him, welcomed him, wanted to let him know he was there, wanted to let him know somebody was right behind him. And it got eerier from there because he continued to look around, but then all of a sudden, he had taken his coat off, and he reaches over, and he starts rummaging through his coat to find something. Now, I'm standing in the back, and my heart is pounding out of my chest, and I'm wondering where my brown pants are. Just a reference. But, I'm looking at Mark, and I'm thinking, okay, Mark, be patient. Wait until it, well, again, he rummages for a few seconds, and he pulls out a piece of gum and sticks it in his mouth and starts chewing the gum. Well, so we got a break. Fortunately, after he looked around a little bit more and Mark spoke to him a couple of more times, he got up and went to the restroom, and that was the break we needed. Me and I got a couple of big guys. We got some big ushers. I got a couple of big ones, and as he walked out of the bathroom, we were standing there, and I introduced myself. And I like to handle these situations, to be honest with you, because I think I've got the most experience in dealing with folks. And so, hey, I'm James Allen, right? Yeah. And I wanted to make sure I had the right person. And so we started talking to him, and after a short conversation, I pretty much made it clear to him that, Alan, we're not going back to the third row. We're going to sit right back there in the back, and Mark's going to sit on one side of you, and I'm going to sit on the other, and we're going to enjoy the service. And so we let him, and the whole time he kept telling me, I just want to talk to Pastor Sandy for a minute. I said, oh, you're going to get time to talk to Pastor Sandy after the service. I promise you, but we're going to sit here for right now. Well, as soon as Pastor Sandy got into the pulpit, he stood up. And I'm going to tell you the rest of the story in just a second. But my point is that security is a lot more than live shooters. So we got to think way beyond that. So let's go to our next
slide. I'm coming back to it.
That was all him. I just want you to know. Let's talk about the awesome stuff of liability, right? The way I look at a church security team is it's you're liable if you have one and you're liable if you don't, right? Either way, it's a lose-lose. I would rather have the liability on the side that we protected lives, you know, God forbid we ever have to shoot someone in our sanctuary, than it would be to lose people, lose a lot of people, right? So your current insurance company for your church, right? I was doing a class, I think it was in LaGrange about a year ago, and I had a guy come up to me and he goes, hey, we just started our security team, but our church insurance company sent us a letter and said, if we don't cease and desist, that they will drop us, right? And he says, what do I do? And I'm like, dude, I don't know. You know, I was like, you know what? Let me make a call. That's the man I called. I said, hey, I got a guy right here, a student in one of my classes. I said, this is what he's told me. I said, who do we have? You know, because I didn't know. And he told me, well, we got Brotherhood Mutual, and they are security team friendly, right? So you might want to look into that. That's something you need to pay attention to, right? The other thing about liability and insurance, okay, there are a multitude of companies in the U.S. that give you liability insurance, criminal and civil, whether you are at church or whether you're at home and somebody's kicking in your door at 3 a.m. There are companies that do that. My company, we work with U.S. Law Shield. I've been a U.S. Law Shield member for a lot of years, and they will cover the cost. Because the thing is, you have a security guy that puts hands on somebody out in the parking lot, you will be sued civilly, at least, right? And then who's supposed to pay for that attorney? The church? Nah, nobody wants to put that on the church. And most people don't have $25,000 sitting around in the bank account to give an attorney, right? So this company provides that for you, right? So out here on this side, which is the west side, we got a table out there. My beautiful wife of a million years will be out there. And I think it's 32, actually. It might not be 33 after that, but she's beautiful and I love her, and I married way above my station. So
you need me to bail you out of this?
No, okay. I'm good. I hate the fact that she's sitting right back there though. But anyway, we have information on that company out there if you want to check it out, right? But get something, have your guys covered, whether the church pay for it or they pay for it themselves, whatever, it's beans, right? It's $10.95 a month. That takes care of the liability inside your church with your security team, okay? And if criminal charges apply, you know, if they try to charge your guy, then that covers that as well, okay?
What's the name of that company?
U.S. Law Shield. Yeah, there are others, but I feel like that they're the best as far as what the coverage you get for the price that you pay.
Yeah, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I will tell you, we do use Brotherhood Mutual. Our agent goes to our church, and I've had a lot of conversations with him, and they have been very friendly towards what we have done with our security team, and I try to keep him abreast of what we do and how we handle it. But let's keep going.
All right, we talked about all that. All right, so let's talk about developing a security team. If you're in a situation where you don't have one or you're looking to start one, where do you start and what's important, okay? Number one, do not fall into the Leo military trap, okay? What that means is if you've got somebody in your church that's former or current law enforcement or used to serve in the military or currently does, that doesn't necessarily make them the head of your security team, right? Now, I'm not saying that they can't be. I'm just saying that doesn't automatically qualify them. They must have leadership skills, and they lead by example. You know, that's basic, right? They need to be organized, and they need to have the spiritual gift of administration, right, to be able to organize stuff and keep it current. And leading by example, to me, is just huge, okay? They have to be a people person. That usually helps, right? Not only for the leader, but team members too. We'll get to that. And servant's heart, also needed by the team members as well. You know, when I talk to somebody about picking a team, and we'll get to that in just a second, but it's important, number one, that you have a servant's heart, right? Because when I stand in front of security teams and I talk to them, one of the things that I say as we're going is, you need to understand what it means when you sign that line that you're going to be on the security team. You have to understand what it means, because it doesn't mean, hey, we hang out, drink coffee in the parking lot and you know, shoot the jive and just do whatever, right? I got 57 guns. I need to be on the security team, right? That's not the one you want, just so you know, right? That's a pro tip. I ain't charging you for that one, okay? But what it means when you say that you're on the security team, it means that you will stand at that door and you will put your life down, if necessary, for the people that sit in this room. That's what it means. And if you haven't thought about it like that, you're not thinking about it the right way, and that's the way it needs to be. And if you're not willing to do that, that's fine. We'll put you doing something else, but you need to understand that. It's very, very important. Servant's heart when you're selecting a team member, willing to stand in the gap against evil to give their life for the congregation. Not everybody has to be armed. Okay, there's plenty of things for unarmed folks to do. You don't need to be arrogant or fast-tempered. not show-offs, right? I can think of one right now that goes here, right? All right. Can't be on the security team, right? You need folks that will blend in, all right? We don't want you coming up here looking like G.I. Joe, right? We ain't got time for that. Always get more. You always get more than you think you will need, right? If you think you need five, get 10, okay? Remember, these are volunteers, okay? That's all I got on that if you want to hit training.
The guys on our security team, and we have six at this point, they've all been selected by Pastor Sandy and I privately. We sit down and talked about every one of them, and we've got guys that we talked about and said, no, don't want to give them that responsibility. And then they've been approved by our elder board. Our elder board identified each one of them, and we voted in an elders meeting that or board meeting that they would be on our security team. We felt like that was important. We've got two former police officers that serve. We've got two guys that served in the military, and we've got two guys that we just trust, that we like, and we feel like we've got good head on their shoulders. Our guys on Sunday morning have no security markings whatsoever. They always come dressed very casually. They all conceal carry, and they all have conceal carry license. And if they're on duty that day, the only way you'll identify them is they'll have an earpiece in because they do communicate with our ushers. And all of our ushers wear communication devices as well as our security team. If they're not on duty on a particular any day when they're here, if they're not on duty, I've asked them to carry even if they're not on duty because I want to know anytime they're here that I know, okay, if I have a problem, I can go get them and I can say, hey, come with me. I need your help because sometimes, when we had this incident happen, one of the things that hit us was all of our security people were in one spot inside the sanctuary. And all of a sudden we thought about, well, what if somebody else walks out? So it's good to know that you have other guys that are there, even if they're not on duty. Also, our security guys understand that drawing a weapon would be the absolute last way to deal with any problem we would have. We have never yet had someone draw a weapon. The only way it would happen is if they're facing somebody who's got a weapon in their hand. And we preach that to them over and over and over again. And we talk about non-lethal ways to handle problems. And that is very important that your security team understand that most of the problems you face are not going to be lethal problems and you don't deal with them. We're not police officers. This is the thing we stress over and over and over again. We are not police officers. Even that police officer that's off duty, they're not going to respond as a police officer. They're a security member of our church at that point, and that's the way they're going to handle themselves. You need to know the carry laws in your state because they're probably different from Georgia, and you need to know what your insurance company will allow. So those are just two things to think about. The other issue that you need to think about as a security team is how many folks in your congregation are also carrying weapons. Have you thought about that? See, and does your church have a policy in place? Because in the state of Georgia, you can carry a weapon to church now unless the church has posted a sign that says you cannot bring a weapon on this property. We have no such signs. I'm watching a young man check his child into preschool a few weeks back, and he bends over to hug his child, and he's got a 9mm in the back of his pants. And I'm like, what are you doing? Now I didn't say anything to him other than when he walked away, I said, it really would probably be a good idea if you hid that a little better if you're going to tote it into church. But we don't stop people because if we stop people, we got to stop everybody. So, which would include our security team. I am the head of our security team here. I don't carry a weapon on Sunday mornings ever unless there were absolutely no one here. None of the guys were here at all. Every once in a while, we'll have a service where I can't get a security guy there. We'll have a women's meeting or something, and I might show up and have something. But that is an absolute last resort. I do all the training with the guys. I'll talk more about that in a minute. But if something's going on, and why am I the head of the security team? It's very simple, because if something's going on in our church, I want to be the guy leading the way. For a couple of reasons, I want to be the person confronting the person. I feel like I've got more experience than most of our guys do. I've been doing it a long time. I'm used to dealing with people in this setting. Now, in other settings, I wouldn't say that, but in this setting, I feel like I've got the most experience, and so I want to be the guy with them. Hey, guys, let me do the talking for now, and let's see if we can decelerate the situation, talk them down, get it under control. That being said, I always surround myself with big guys. I found there is no substitute for a big guy beside you. You don't ever want to act alone. That can get you in a lot of trouble. Our security team works in conjunction with our ushers. Our ushers are not armed. We have one guy that's on both our, well, we have two, you and one other guy, that are ushers and security team, but most of our ushers are not armed. But they are vital to the security of our church. Years ago, our ushers were more like greeters, but they're not anymore. We've totally redefined their role in our church as almost totally security. We have two ushers each Sunday morning that do nothing but monitor the parking lots, one on each side, and that's their job during that service. Because as Chris mentioned earlier, you want to stop the problems before they get inside, because once they get inside, the potential for what they can do vastly, exponentially grows. And so we really talk to our guys each week about, let's keep things in the parking lot. Let's don't let them get inside. Secondly, we want to guard our entrance ways. And a big part of that is keeping all the doors locked. You know, we got a ton of doors in our building, as you probably do, because, you know, churches are built to do what? Let people in. So we got doors everywhere. And we keep every door locked on Sunday morning except our side doors. And we monitor those doors to make sure that we're funneling people into the right places. You know, if you leave your back door open, in other words, you're watching what's going on out here, and all of a sudden somebody walks in through your back door and they walked into your children's ministry, bad news. And so, you know, guard your entrance ways, keep things locked. And also, and I mentioned this earlier, we teach our guys never, ever approach somebody alone. First call, if they see a problem, the first call is, hey, can somebody come over here to the parking lot with me? I got a problem. Or, hey, I'm over here on the Sunday school side. Can somebody come over here with me? We don't ever want to deal with an issue alone. There was a security guy this past year out in a Calvary Chapel out west that saw a suspicious car in the parking lot. He walked out there by himself. Guy ran over him, killed him. Don't let your guys, train your guys. We don't do this alone. You remember Jesus sent the guys out two by two. We send our guys out two by two. I mentioned very briefly the communication system, guys. If you're serious about your security, the very first thing is buy a good communication system, because without a communication system, you're not going to be able to really adequately secure your facility. You guys have got to be able to talk to each other and to know what's going on. It's a big campus, and we get people all the time pull into our lower parking lot on Sunday morning. Hey, we got somebody in the lower parking lot. People go down there and they hide behind the bus and behind the cars, and so we need to be able to deal with that. Just to reiterate one point Chris made that I just want to reiterate. When selecting guys, don't look for Rambos. That's not what you want on your security team. Yes, you want tough guys and you want guys that can handle themselves, but you're looking for guys that are temperate. You're looking for guys that are self-controlled, guys that are slow to anger, but guys that are willing to sacrifice themselves and their safety for other people. We're not looking for guys that are going to say, hey, you know, I'm toting a gun. You know, I'm a big man. You just don't want people with that attitude. And our guys, you know, they do that. We don't want them. We want guys that you never know that they were carrying a weapon. Chris.
All right, let's talk about training. Now, You see, I got the one about money up here first because I got a room full of pastors, right? When I do my classes, I always ask, is there a pastor in the room, right? Because when it comes to spending money, hey, I get it, right? I understand. But this is one thing you don't want to skip on, because the lives of your people depend on it. The worst thing you can have is armed people in your church that are untrained. Now, I know everybody thinks they're trained when they carry a gun. Oh, yeah, I took a class 15 years ago. When's the last time you shot it? I don't know. Can't tell you. That's a problem. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me pull that out of the holster right there. Let me unload it and look at it. It's got lint in it. You know, it's discolored from the holster. That's, you have to have some training, and it has to be somewhat regular, right? So training's important. It costs time and money. Now, if you're looking for somewhere for the Leo or the military instructor to go, make him the head of training. That's perfect. If they're an instructor, they would be perfect in that role, right? Team chemistry is very important. Not all activities must be shooting related, but spend time as a team doing anything, right? When I give these classes, and I sometimes I'll give them in a hotel, and there'll be multiple churches in there, you know, represented there. And I ask, how many of you train together? I hardly ever get a hand. How many of you do anything together? I hardly ever get a hand, right? In 2 years, I've got two hands, okay? So how can you be a team of anything and you don't do anything together? You have no chemistry. That's important, because at the end of the day, if the worst case scenario happens in that parking lot, your life depends on the guy next to you. How can you trust your life to the guy next to you if you don't know the guy next to you? Right? That's important. Have a set training schedule at least once a year. At least doing something. Right? Hire a good-looking guy like me to come to your church. Do some training. And then the next time, get a local instructor to take your guys to the range and do live fire training. You got to have something, right? Suggested training topics. Internal expectations. What expectations does leadership have for this team? As leadership of your church, you have to set the expectations of this team, right? Me being a part of the team here, I know what James and Sandy expect from us. Hey, this is how we want you to handle this. We don't want you to beat people in the face until this happens, okay? That's basically what it is, okay? All team members should know that right up front. You should get good, reputable firearms training. Check reviews of local firearm trainers. I've been a firearms trainer for a long time, and what I tell anybody that's looking for firearms training is the first time you come across an instructor that knows everything and doesn't take training himself, run, right? Because the minute you think you know everything, that's when it bites you, okay? Training should be done at least every 6 months, in a minimum. Medical training is a necessity, okay? As James pointed out earlier, 90% of what your safety team will deal with is service interruptions or medical emergencies. So who on your team is medically trained? Are you just going to do like they do on the airplane? Is there a doctor on board? Is there a doctor in here? Is there, you know, a nurse, whatever? It's too late then, you know. And when I do my classes, I harp on this because I think medical is something that a lot of safety teams miss. Right? And, you know, in Sutherland Springs, in that shooting that they had there, 26 people were killed in that shooting, 22 injured. Right? Just some quick math, that's 48 people. There were only 56 there that day. Okay? There was no one there to oppose him. Over 15 of those lives would have been saved had anybody had any kind of medical equipment there and the knowledge to use it. Okay? Very, very important. And, you know, when I teach my class, I'll talk about law enforcement response. You're calling 911. They're coming to the church to help you out, right? But the thing is, what happens when they get there is something you might not expect. They're going to come through the door, step over dead or dying people, and they're going to go find the shooter. That's job one. Then they're going to search every room in the church. Then they will call EMS that's three blocks away and say, y'all, come on, you're good. So now you have to think, how many rooms does your church have, and how long is it going to take to search that? Because that's how long before medical help's coming. You got to think about that, right? De-escalation training, as James was talking about, hugely important, because the last thing you want to do is pull a gun out on something that doesn't need a gun pulled out on, right? So how do you de-escalate the situation? There's great de-escalation training to know what to say and how to say it and not appear to be, you know, adversarial, to try to back that person down. Because again, 90% is gonna be mentally ill or domestic or, you know, something like that, okay? All right.
Yeah, pastors, it's good to know who the nurses and doctors are in your fellowship. We have three or four nurses. It's just always good to know who those people are in case you do have an emergency, because you know, very few are probably fortunate enough to have a doctor around, but most of you probably have a nurse or two, and boy, those people in an emergency are great. You know, when it comes to training, I had to face the fact with our team that we're not the police academy, and our training is very limited, and because I do not want to give you the impression that, man, our guys every month, man, we're out there, you know, that's not the case. We try to do training about once a year. Last month, we took our guys, myself and our six other guys up to North Georgia, and the former Gwinnett County police guy that does all the police training retired, and he set up a thing up in North Georgia, and we took our guys up there. The church paid for it all. It was, we got there, 8 in the morning, didn't leave till 5:30 that night, and stopped for about 20 minutes for lunch, and it was a great, great training. Humbling. You think you can shoot a gun until you stand next to somebody who can really shoot a gun. And it was a humbling experience. He also put us through some tactical movements things. Again, very humbling. You think, you know, you watch TV, you think you know how to do things. You don't. But again, we paid for the class for the guys. They furnished their own weapons and ammunition. But it was a good investment. And we try to do that about once a year, or have someone come in and do some teaching. In the past few years, we've done three different training classes with different folks. Chris did one. We have another military guy in our church that actually works with MWAs, Weapons of Mass Destruction. Did I get that correct? He came in and did a wonderful training with us. Those kind of things are important. When we do the training, we usually do it with our ushers and our security team together because, again, they work together. One of the interesting things we did was we had one of our police officers come in with a rifle with blanks in it, and we sat in here, and he went around the building and shot it off. And we said, can you tell where the shot came from? You're amazed at how difficult it is to know where that shot came from. Or we would go back in the office area, he'd go back in the classroom area and fire it off. It echoes through the building, very difficult to know. It was a wonderful exercise, though, to help us learn to recognize what a gunshot sounds like inside your building as opposed to other things, but also to help you realize how difficult it is to actually know when you hear a shot where it comes from. And they often talk about that in live shootings in buildings where people oftentimes run right to the shooter because they don't know where the shot came from. But we have also, in all of our training, we've done some live shooter training because that's important, but I would say about 50% of our training is towards other things, and, you know, not having to do with live shooting, because, again, the live shooting is something we hope and pray we'll never face and probably won't, but you'll face some of these other situations that can get out of hand if we don't know how to de-escalate them. So let's talk very quickly about a plan of action. We're running out of time.
Plan of action. Good communication is a must, right? On the table out there, I have a good example of a cheap but effective radio, right? You don't have to have Motorolas and spend thousands of dollars, okay? Parking lot is the key. The threat must be recognized and stopped outside. Know and communicate with the team any known or suspected domestic issues where kids are involved. The two hardest targets in your church should be the kids area and the front door, right? Nursery and children's ministry needs to be a very hard target. Detached buildings with classes or youth church going on need security too. So if you have a separate building, you need to have a team handling that as well, especially when youngins are involved. You need to limit the number of entries into your church if you cannot cover them, right? Now, this can get crazy, right? Because I know Miss Sally's been coming to this church for 40 years, and she's been parking in the same spot for 40 years, right? And Miss Sally's going to be triggered when you tell her, we can't cover that entrance, Miss Sally. You're going to have to come over here. Miss Sally's going to give you the what for, okay? But what's more important? Miss Sally or everybody else, right? Invest in cameras, lots of them, okay? My full-time job, I have a 16 camera set for $540, I think, okay? I didn't ask where it was made, I just said send it to me, okay? They work well, and they're HD 1080p, okay? Situational awareness. Know what you're looking for and how to handle it. Any kind of situation you find yourself in, you have to see the threat before it's a threat. If you don't see it coming, you're putting yourself in a bad situation. You've heard the folks on the news all the time, well, he came out of nowhere. No, he didn't. You just weren't paying attention, right? That's it.
Yeah. Just real quickly, every Sunday morning, about 30 minutes before the service, I meet with our guys. We talk about the day. I usually always remind them, hey, let's pay attention. Don't get caught up talking to each other. Let's pay attention to what we're doing. We assign locations where they're going to be, one in each parking lot, one in the sanctuary, one roams. Sometimes we have five, and we'll give him a different assignment. But as the leader of the security team, I always try to think about what is Pastor Sandy talking on that day. And if he's talking on Romans chapter 1 or something like that, I tell the guys, hey, guys, today somebody might jump up in the middle of the service and just scream because they hate what we're talking about or they disagree with us. Know what your pastor is going to talk on that Sunday. Or if you're the senior pastor, you might communicate with your guys, hey, today, man, we're going to be talking about transgender or homosexuality. And it might be somebody walks in off the street, ain't going to like it. So be prepared for that. So I meet with the guys. We give out assignments. I do encourage them. We have two services. I encourage them in the second service, switch with somebody. Because I don't want you to get tired of looking at the same place. I want a new surrounding for you. So I do try to make them switch places. We have developed a couple of other emergency situations we worry about is evacuations for fire. You know, it's hard to practice a fire drill for church. You know, we practice them all the time in school. You never practice them for churches. I keep it real simple for our ushers and our security guys. Start with the youngest children and work your way up. First place we go is to the nursery. Get those kids out. Preschool, get those kids out. Older people, parents, get out of the way. We'll get them out of here. So when it comes to a fire evacuation plan, they just think one word, young. Start young, work up. We're working on a lockdown plan. We have installed very high secure locks for all of our classrooms that you can just flip and they key punch to get back in. We did that mainly for the school, but we can also use it on Sunday morning. Lockdowns are really hard in churches because churches are not made to lock down. We're made to let people in and out. And also think about tornadoes. We have a place where we know we're going to take our kids if we have a tornado. A couple of years ago in the pastor's conference, we had a tornado warning go off, if you guys remember that. And we have a drill for that. Again, where do we start? Young. Start young. Get the kids, elementary school and below, get them to a safe place. We go over those things once a year with our security team in our training. A couple of simple things, simple principles we follow. Because if you don't, remember, guys, keep it simple. Because if it gets complicated, people are not going to know what to do in an emergency. Here's a few simple thoughts. Always focus on the youngest. Focus on the youngest. Protect the youngest. If you can just keep that in your mind when you're scared, focus on the youngest. Number two, I tell our ushers every week, if something happens and you're unsure what to do, stop. Don't panic and wait for some instruction. I think a lot of times we make situations worse because something happens. We don't know what to do, but we're determined to do something and we do the wrong thing. And then third, know where the problem is before you try to solve that problem. In other words, if the problem's outside, what's the last thing we want to do? Send people outside. If the problem's inside, we want to get people out. We got to know where the problem is. Just a couple of final thoughts for you. Guys, know what you're looking for. And I say this to all pastors, assistant pastors, security people. If it doesn't look right or it doesn't feel right, it isn't right probably. Most situations that don't look right and don't feel right are not right. Trust your instincts. If you see somebody in the middle of summertime walking across your parking lot and they got a trench coat on and it's 90 degrees outside, does that look right? No. So somebody ought to be walking over to him saying, "Hey, I'm James. How you doing today?" You know? If it doesn't look right, deal with it. Trust God to give you warnings or insights. And always be alert to disruptions going on in your sanctuary. And let me just finish my story real quick. We're sitting on the back row right back there. Pastor Sandy gets up to speak. And as soon as Pastor Sandy said good morning, God jumps up. And he yells across the stage, "Hello, Pastor Sandy! It's..." And he identified himself. And Pastor Sandy turned and addressed him, said, "Hey, so-and-so, good to see you. Glad you're with us this morning." And the guy wanted to just tell Sandy thank you. So he let Sandy let him talk for a moment. And after that moment, I escorted him out along with our two big usher guys. And we just said, "That's great. Let's move on." And we got him out of the sanctuary. We let him say his... Here's the way we deal with disturbances in the sanctuary. And we've talked about this with Pastor Sandy. We go with we let him guide what we do. Now, this is assuming it's not dangerous. Somebody jumps up in the service. What do? We let Pastor Sandy, if he wants to address and interact with him, we'll let him. And sometimes he will. Had a lady jump up one time screaming because Pastor Sandy was talking about wives being submissive to their husband or something. We had a lady jump up and scream, "That's all there." And he had a little conversation with her, and then we escorted her out. But we kind of let Pastor Sandy guide us. Your pastor, you need to communicate. Pastor, you need to communicate with your ushers. How do you want to handle situations like that? I have had situations where I haven't allowed. I mean, if it's disruptive, just grab them by the arm and we escort them out. I mean, if they're just disrupting things, you know, again, every situation is different. But just in that situation, we escorted him out. We escorted him to his car, and we had some conversation with him, and he drove off, and he was happy, and we were happy. But we got a picture of his car and his tag, and we kept it in our usher's closet. Guys, if you see this car, be on the lookout, because and we have to do that. If we have domestic disputes, and we know if the especially the mom has come to us and says, "You know, my husband is after our kids," something like that. "Do you have a picture of him?" "Yes, give us your picture." We'll put it up in our nursery. We'll put it up in our usher's closet. Guys, be on the lookout for this guy. So, Chris, real quickly, resources.
Yeah, we got a few different resources here. If you read none of these, that's terrible. But if you want to read at least one of them, read Gavin DeBecker's The Gift of Fear, especially females. Please read that. It is awesome and will open your eyes to a lot of things. If you want to take a picture of that, you can take a picture of that. Of course, the best resource this here is me. So Wendy, my wife, and I, we have Advocate Defense, and we train churches. That's what our, that's where our heart is. You know, I've been a firearms instructor for a long time, and but we want to train churches. We want to make sure that you're safe. Okay. Just real quick, I had a lady.
You got 1 minute.
1 minute. I had a lady in one of my classes one time in Augusta, and I was doing a class over there. Had about 60 people in there. And she came up after. She goes, you know, it's a shame that we have to do this in our churches and that, this and that and the other. And I told her, I said, yeah. She goes, I just can't believe it. I said, you know what? I said, ma'am, I don't know. I'm not trying to insult you or anything, but, you know, do you read the Bible? And she said, yeah. I said, how about Revelation? She said, well, you know, it's kind of hard to understand, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, you probably need to read that. I said, because it's telling us this is coming. And guess what, sweetie? It's only going to get worse, right? So we have to be prepared. It's our responsibility to be prepared. And with the help of God, we can keep our places safe, okay?
Amen. Hey, let's pray.